no idea if this wind's going to be like bad.
It'll be fine.
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, cool.
We can huddle.
That'll make it awkward and even better.
Yeah.
Which is what I do best. Making awkwardness great again.
Us too.
Okay, so you are on Not About the Weather podcast, live from San Diego Comic Con. So what is your name for our people listening who cannot see you?
They can't see me.
No, they can't see
this
you.
This is audio only?
This is audio only.
So they
only.
Can't see what I'm wearing right now?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
well, I could describe it and then it'd get very sultry.
Yeah.
My name is Charlie Capon. I am Vice President of Strategy and Operations for the greatest international scavenger hunt the world has ever seen, which is the longest title for a company I've ever seen in my life.
So the actual company name is registered as that, is that
it's,
correct?
It's technically registered as Kishwa's LLC, a.k.a. Misha's Fever Dream.
Oh.
I believe.
Oh, dear.
That could be wrong.
So, what brings you to San Diego Comic-Con this year?
I am at the beck and call of an insane madman named Misha Collins, who I've known for some years. I left a normal life, a civilian life, to work for Kishwa's and make the world weirder and kinder, hopefully. So we are here doing some fun stunts and activations and trying to hijack it in the best ways possible.
So what was your first involvement with Kishwa's, if you knew Misha prior to that?
Sure. Well, I've known about Kishwa's since it started. I've helped friends with items. I had a few friends actually last year make the book, which I was very proud of them. And I've been on a similar path in terms of wanting to combine commerce and social media and social good, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I've been talking about a lot of those subjects for a while, and they wore me down, is what it came down to, and then decided to make the jump and change the world and make it weirder.
Oh, what was your background before this?
I've been doing digital strategy and social media marketing for over 15 years. Mm-hmm. I was at Netflix, where I ran about 8 shows.
Wow.
Before this, including some things that are here at the con.
The marketing for them.
Yeah. So social media content and strategy. Yeah. And before that, I was at Fox. And I also was started a blog about 6 years ago, which then turned into a thing that I could actually make money at.
Oh.
And so it's helped keep my wife at home to watch her boys through the blog, which is weird.
Yeah, it is kind of. But it's good.
No, it's
goals.
Good. Hashtag goals. We monetized the blog, and then it also was a place where I could try digital strategy and try like soup to nuts concepts and fail without being fired or lose a client. So I scaled that very quickly and learned a lot about marketing that they don't teach you in schools, which is how do you create fandom, how do you create community, how do you interface with a brand, how does that all work?
Yeah, what you're talking about, like with creating fandom, creating community, especially when money is involved, whether that is for charity or whether that is for profit.
Sure.
What do you think is the key to sort of actually keeping that, like, feel organic as opposed to feel, like, gimmicky or, like, you know,
old
man out of touch situation with
Are you saying
with
I'm an old man out of touch?
Not you. I'm saying other brands
I feel
are
like
old
you're saying it to
touch.
My face. I don't know if you guys can see this. She's looking right at me while she's saying it.
No, I'm saying you're a good example.
Oh, good. Okay, so
a
I'm not
young
old
man in touch.
With a non-gray beard. I think the key is the authenticity and belief of the people who are part of it. I think one of the reasons Misha is a great example of sort of social good and social media sort of, I mean, well, let's be honest, a lot of typos. He's a little crazy. He doesn't really frame his camera work very well. Let's just be honest here. But the brilliance of what he does is he believes what he's saying, and that translates into a momentum that is created, because when you have an idea, and charity is one of those rare things that is sometimes difficult to communicate in a way that really galvanizes people. It can be a flashpoint where everybody discusses it or everybody gets on board, but that tipping point is really the way the people who are a part of it feel and the way they express it to get people on board and really translate that vision. So Misha is brilliant at translating an insane vision and getting people on board for the ride no matter what. And because he is equally invested in on the ride himself. So that, I think, helps a lot when you're trying to raise money for Nepal.
Something.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you're trying to do good. So the bigger Kishwa's or the bigger, you know, you can do for a charitable campaign, the more impact you can have. It's, at the end of the day, you're not trying to sell. You're trying to get people to make a dent in the universe. And that is something that isn't sales. That goes way bigger than that. And I think he's great at speaking up for people who are marginalized and keeping his eye on the ball with a lot of these topics. So that always kind of inspired me about what he did in that way. So I think at the end of the day, your belief and your ability to translate that belief into something that people understand and get excited by, that's the key.
Given your given that you just came on board like in the last 12 months, is that correct? And then it's sort of been announced that this is the final hunt in this current form. Can we assume that you still have a job on the horizon with whatever happens next with Gishwas LLC?
Wish I could say. The future is dark and full of terrors. Is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, Game of Thrones is a good representation of my life now. So, there's a lot of work to be done, and I believe, you know, Misha isn't in the habit of letting people down.
Yeah.
And if anything, just getting bigger and crazier and weirder, I think, is the goal. Mm-hmm. So. I'm along for whatever he's got going.
Was there anything that you had to personally... Obviously, like, a big part of Gishwas is kind of shame or lack of...
Yeah, shaming people.
As a form of freedom, is there anything that you have been involved with so far that you were just like, I can't believe we're doing this? Like, do you have any of the hang-ups that he doesn't have, perhaps, or anything like that?
No. Well, I can be very personal for a moment. Yeah. I lost all of my ability to be embarrassed when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. My father picked me up in a towel from middle school because he forgot to pick me up.
I'm sorry.
That was the moment I never felt embarrassed about anything ever again. Mm-hmm. So I may lack that muscle memory myself. I mean, do I go, is this really a good idea? Maybe, I don't know. Is this legal? Is this okay? A lot. And the cool thing is pushing those boundaries is really how you make progress. And I think when you're incrementally trying to make a difference or try to get people out of their comfort zone, you know, there's a lot of boundary pushing that happens there. And, I don't know. It's funny. I think your description of him as an experienced dominatrix was pretty delightful. I felt like it was very like a not. You could have put a not safe for work on the article. Just, you know, just saying.
Is the word dominatrix in and of itself?
I don't know. Let me go ask my 7-year-old if he thinks dominatrix is safe for work or not. I'll find out.
Why are you showing your 7-year-old my article?
Well, he said he was a big fan, and I didn't believe him.
Okay.
And he said, well, I read the thing about the dominatrix. So.
Okay, yeah, I think that is very much the vibe I've always got from it, is that element. That aside.
So, do I have hang-ups? Yes, I'm a human being. I get embarrassed easily? No. I think in order for us to have life-changing or cathartic experiences, I think we have to push our boundaries, and we have to be willing to sort of eviscerate ourselves emotionally or, you know, push the boundaries with courage. You know, the list of the hunt itself is really about compassion and about creativity and about courage. And I think those elements without risk don't really change the world as much as they could unless you do risk. If that makes sense.
Is there anything you've like lost sleep over logistically?
You mean every day?
Yeah.
Every day. Every day I wonder and think and worry and ponder on the things that we're doing. There's not a day that doesn't go by where I'm like, oh my God! It feels like it's a roller coaster because you're alternating between going up the track and going down the track. So,
okay.
You know.
It seems like a very strange company to run. And
I don't know who you heard that from, but they're a total liar.
Yeah. Okay, so just to hit the points of our normal segment, do you have a hype and a gripe to bring today, whether that's about Comic-Con in general or about what you're doing or just in your life at the moment?
Hype-wise, I mean, registering people for Gishwas is my jam right now, obviously. But I think the bigger picture for that is getting fandom to fan the flames of doing good, and also using fandom for good is pretty spectacular. I've been involved in fandoms for a decade, and I've never seen a fandom like this.
Yeah.
Like, objectively. And I've worked on, like, Kardashian stuff, I've worked with Marvel, I've worked with everybody. And this fandom is special, and I've never seen anything like it.
Do you think that higher up execs in certain networks and stuff like that sort of take the capacity and power of fan bases. Sort of, they don't fully understand it at the moment.
Well, it's hard because it's such a large swath of people. I think, you know, a lot of marketing gets boiled down to like demographics or psychographics, and that's not a good way to look at humanity necessarily, because it diminishes like the complexity of it. I can't say that I fully understand any large group to any degree. Like, I can't imagine being a politician or somebody running, like, a head of state.
Mm.
In a similar way, I don't know that an executive can wrap their brain around something that they're not so immersed in as us. And I think I've seen the best creatives I've met have been really in touch with fandom or have been a part of fandoms in the past themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you see, like it or hate it, you know, Force Awakens felt like it came from a fan.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's undeniable.
Yeah.
Because you can see the childlike wonder of that in the frame and in every performance. So I think the best people are fans, because then they bring that verve and that passion for it. But I don't know if higher ups do.
How about a gripe? What is pissing you off at the moment?
What's pissing me off at the moment?
Yeah.
I mean, the 3.5 hours driving down here was pretty great. I have to say, I got to that point where it was going 0.5 miles an hour, and I was like, I'm gonna call all my friends, I'm gonna FaceTime people, I'm gonna do whatever, I'm gonna do my taxes. Like, I'm literally sitting in a box.
Yeah. I got the train.
You are a very smart person. Usually I take the train down here for reasons I cannot say. I had to drive down.
Oh, okay.
And it was driving and traffic stuff. I don't know, a gripe?
Anything that you are pissed... I mean, that's a good enough one.
No, you know, I'm going to say something that's going to get me in trouble. I'm trying not to say something that's going to get me in trouble.
What would get you in trouble?
Oh, it's that good journalism right there.
No, for real.
Legitimately.
If we're talking about, like timing-wise,
right.
This won't come out for a little while.
Okay. So, this is sort of far afield, but it'll be roundabout.
Okay.
Back last April, I went to the White House to speak on a panel. I was with a bunch of people who are way more brilliant than I am, and spoke about topics that I care about, which are breaking down gender bias as a parent. So, I have two boys. I'm trying to help them basically break down the patriarchy and teach them about how to be good men. And I don't think patriarchy will go away unless we teach men and boys. So my big beef right now is people who say boys are easy and girls are complex. Because the minute a boy has a complex emotion or feeling, they feel like there's something wrong with them. And I think we see it in media, and I think we see it in music, and I think we see it all over the place. And that is my gripe, that boys cannot be amazing feminists who help disestablish and dismantle patriarchy.
Toxic masculinity is a prison.
Yes, I think if we're going to do the work, I think boys and men are a big part of that, and I think we have a longer way to go with that.
And then just our question of the day, which we'll be asking to everyone at the convention that we talk to: what is your most memorable moment from a former convention that you attended in any capacity? Which is the first one that comes to mind? I guess.
Oh man, you mean Comic-Con or just generally conventions?
Convention. It can be anything.
I think the first time I came to San Diego Comic-Con years ago, and watching the way people responded to the actors was really memorable, because I love storytelling and I love stories, and so for people to look at a person's performance or be excited about, because I've been a geek my whole life, I like stereotypically, like, braces, glasses, sweatpants, Dungeons and Dragons. Let's just go the full Monty.
Yeah.
And
nothing wrong with that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I went full bore, and so for me, that's at my heart. And I've had to do a lot of work on myself to be okay with that part of myself in some ways, because, you know, school's tough and people treat you poorly.
Yeah.
And to be able to see people who were marginalized become cool and become the movers and shakers within entertainment, which is one of the most lucrative things, is so fucking cool and powerful that just lit me up inside, that, like, as a Star Wars fan, as a Harry Potter fan, as a fan of so many different things, from comics to, you know, Japanese anime, to watch people get that representation was really cool.
Cool. Thank you very much for hanging out with us today at Comic-Con.
Thanks.
And we will talk more soon.
I can't wait to be shamed by this article.
Oh, it's...
And my old manhood.
You're old.
My old. Yes, you said you're old. You are old. You just literally said that sentence.
I didn't.
You're old, is what you said.
We can play the tape back. I slurred my words. I think I'm
losing my voice.
Last night.
I hope I don't have conch.
Like 4 or 5. But I woke up fine. But I was. My voice was gone. Yeah. I think it's just the dry air.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is Karen, and I'm standing with Karen right now. I'm talking to Karen Hallian, who you guys might know on the internet as the woman who does the Doctor Who and Disney crossover stuff. I own more of your artwork than I probably should. It's a little embarrassing. I have a Hercules problem, which she knows very well. But it's some great stuff, and you guys should definitely check her out. So, hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Today's the last day of the convention. Yeah. Are you ready for it to be over, or...?
I feel like San Diego Comic-Con always goes way too fast and is so exhausting that I'm ready for it to be over, but then on the plane ride back, I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. Now we have to wait a whole nother year.
Yeah, It's tough. Yeah. They're long days, and every day they open the convention a little earlier. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I've been running ragged trying to do press stuff and all this other stuff, and I always complain about it, but we get some really cool opportunities, so it's worth it in
the
end.
Walking through the convention hall in the morning before it opens, I'm like, I can't believe this is my life.
Yep, it's exactly. So it's so awesome.
Yeah.
So tell everybody what you've been up to lately, because you've been doing this for quite a while, and I've been following you for quite a while, and all of your stuff coming out now between the Hamilton stuff is really awesome, and you also worked with Hank Green for Wizarding School.
Yeah.
I mean, that had to have been pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty great. He emailed me. He's like, I know you probably don't have time for this, but, you know, would you want to do the art for my new game? And I'm like, are you kidding me? And he later told me, he's like, I thought for sure you were going to say no. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, really? That was a huge project. It was really challenging. After I accepted it, I spent about 3 weeks freaking out, pacing around my studio being like, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. Because I had to create all of my own characters, all new work, all these new creatures. Hank's imagination is crazy. So he came up with all of these concepts that were really hard to illustrate. But it was fantastic for me as an artist. It really pushed me to grow. But it was really hard. It was like a year on and off, a year and a half worth of work. I'm still working on the expansion pack right now. I've got maybe like 20 cards left, so I'm hoping to finish it up when I get back. It was an incredible opportunity, but it was like one of those, it hurt real bad in a lot of ways, but it was fantastic. And I keep telling that to Hank, and he's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, no.
It was good.
But it was hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's always important to challenge yourself as an artist and everything like that. And, I mean, you've been working in a lot of different mediums lately, too. I mean, obviously, everything's illustrated because that's what you do, but you have coloring books now, and you're kind of trying out different ways to put your art out there. Has that been difficult to find ways to kind of keep people interested, because you're always coming out with new designs, but finding other ways to get your artwork to people?
Yeah, well, I think you always have to push yourself as an artist, and you have to think about, you know, everybody's got a lot of shirts, or everybody has not enough wall space. And then also just keeping myself interested too. And I mean, I love doing the Disney Doctor Who, I love doing the Star Wars, I'll always do that, but I also want a new things as well. And so creating my own character, it's kind of reminds me of the Hank Green Wizard School thing, whereas it's terrifying.
Yeah.
What if people don't like it? What if people are only interested in the other Disney Doctor Who stuff, and now they're kind of like, I don't really like this very much. But at the same time, you can't just stay still. You have to keep pushing yourself. And so I love working digitally, but I have to make sure that I keep my hand in other mediums as well, because then I can bring that back into the digital stuff. It's definitely tricky. Yeah.
And speaking of your original character, I know you're working on that very hard, and it's been a very long process for you.
Yeah.
What is your plan with that? Are you doing a comic, or...
So, it's like overwhelming. My first instinct, I was talking a lot with Brian Kessinger, because he's created Victoria and Otto, and it's just crazy. And he was like, really start off small, just concept-y kind of stuff, have the audience be involved, listen to them. So right now it's mostly just kind of illustrations and trying to figure out what she looks like. I want to kickstart a calendar, hopefully this year, but we'll make that decision in the next couple weeks, of all illustrations of her. But then I also have a children's book. She's about right now she's like, you know, maybe somewhere teenager, early adult, but I want to do a children's book where she's about 6 or 7, and I've kind of half written that as well. I want to do some comic panels of her and maybe make a graphic novel, but it's like, yeah, it's very overwhelming. So right now I'm kind of figuring out who she is, and probably the children's book would come out first, I think, because I have a clear idea for that one.
Right, and then you can just keep building
from
there.
And then I can
keep
building,
right.
Yeah. And I want to create a world for her. I want to create more characters in her world, but I'm just trying to start slow because when I think about the big picture, I freak out. I get really overwhelmed. So, yeah, I don't know how people do it. Like, I'm looking around this aisle and I know this place, yeah. And I know people do it, and I'm just in awe.
Right. Well, you've got plenty of time and you've got plenty of talent, so like it will come through. You just got to keep working
on
it. So, of course, we are at San Diego Comic-Con this year, and there's a lot of crazy stuff coming out of this convention.
Yes.
What have you heard lately that's got you most excited?
I'm trying to think what I just heard yesterday. I honestly, it's tough because I don't get to hear very much here because I have no Wi-Fi at all.
Okay.
So, and because we're always so busy, I'm really excited about the Ready Player One.
Yeah, I was in that panel.
Were you really?
I was. Yeah.
All my friends are talking about it. I just downloaded the book. I'm excited about reading it. That seems really, really cool. The Avengers. I mean, not the Avengers. I'm sorry. Wow. I just lost geek
con brain.
Justice League, because I want to see more Wonder Woman.
Yes.
I mean, the rest of them are real cool.
Can
but
I tell
see more
you,
Wonder Woman.
When we were in that panel, literally every time she came on screen, the entire hall just lost their minds.
Yeah.
Like, even if it was a quick glimpse, they lost their minds. It was so satisfying as a geek girl to see that and, like, hear all the guys respond to that, too. Like, they're so into it, and
yes.
I love it so much.
So I think for me, seeing the response to her, I will see her in anything like at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that, seeing the pictures come out of that. I happened to have to run over to the bathroom and saw the Westworld cast come out.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, yes! I'm very excited about that new season. But it's tough because all the trailers that come out and everything, I don't see until I get home.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I have just nothing, no Wi-Fi, no signal. It's really tough back here.
I tweeted yesterday, it's going to take me a day to catch up on everything that came out of San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's so, like, some people at home are like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Like,
no.
No, I've seen this little square foot, 4 feet table right here, and that's about it, but that's fine. It's
yeah.
Good.
So, obviously we do our hype and a gripe, so I'm glad you're hyped for that kind of stuff. What about your gripe? What's got you kind of annoyed lately?
Honestly, I would say, and actually it's a hype and a gripe combined, is the new Doctor.
Okay.
I am hyped.
Right.
But the gripe is seeing some people being upset that it's a woman, and I get some of it, but some of it I'm like... I really, it's a doctor that changes his body every time. Like, I don't get
it's,
that.
This
part.
Is
like,
not the weirdest thing he's ever done.
I mean, I expected the sexism. I expected that. But the people who are like, this is messing with the character and this is that. I'm like, it's not. I think that for me has been a gripe lately. I am completely hyped. And I heard rumors that she might be here today.
Oh.
In the Doctor Who panel. Rumors, not anything. But people are speculating. And I'm so hyped up about that. But,
if she's going to make a surprise appearance anywhere, it would be here.
It would be here, and it'd be perfect. But my gripe has been I'm shocked at... No, I'm not shocked, though. That's the thing. I'm not shocked. But this particular character is so perfect for them to do that. It's so perfect, and that's, I think, is very surprising to me above and beyond the normal sexism that's out there. But it's also so important. I'm so excited about it.
And honestly, the thing that I love about that situation is that everybody on Twitter is dragging those people, and their tweets about it are hilarious.
I don't usually like to do that, and I could not help myself. I got into too many arguments with Twitter people, which I generally try not to do, because I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Your argument makes no sense whatsoever. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to finish up with our question of the day, which is, what is your most memorable convention experience from the past?
I mean, I've been very lucky. I've had a lot of them. At C2E2 recently, Will Wheaton showed up at my table to come looking for me. I've known him online for a lot of times, I did a shirt featuring him that T. Fury sold for charity a long time ago. I've talked to him before. He's friends with Hank Green, and they kind of helped me connect with Hank Green.
Okay.
But he was at C2E2 doing something. I knew he was there, and I look up, and he's standing in front of my table with his two handlers to keep everybody away.
Yeah.
And I mostly managed to keep my cool, mostly. If I'm going to meet somebody and I am able to prepare, I can be really cool.
Right.
When they just show up at my table,
surprise.
He was so sweet. He's so nice and so sincere, and it was really great. Yeah.
And I assume you know he narrated the audiobook for Ready Player One. Okay.
Yes, my boyfriend has been listening to it, and he's like, this is so weird listening to Will do this. Yeah, I did.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
he's a great guy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this with us. I always love talking to you and visiting your booths every year. I will see you in New York, so that's really exciting. Where can everyone find you online?
Pretty much if you Google Karen Hellion, you'll find me.
Up.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. There's KarenHellion.com. And Facebook is mostly art. Mm-hmm. Instagram is more art and personal stuff, and then Twitter's kind of a little political these days.
Yeah.
A little more sexually
I don't think
active.
A lot of people would blame me for
so
that.
So that one is where I have my outlet. But Karen Hellion Art on Instagram, Karen Hellion on Facebook.
And Facebook is good because you do a lot of giveaways and a lot of really awesome things.
Yeah, that's
that,
more of the hub these days.
Right, yeah.
That's
exactly.
Definitely the hub these
cool.
days.
Cool. And we did do an interview with you back in the day on hypeable.com, so you guys can also check that out. But thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day, and your table is kind of crazy right now, so I'm going to let you get back to it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So we're here at San Diego Comic-Con 2017 with Mike Dante DiMartino, who will be participating in Not About the Weather today on our compilation clip. So hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So how would our listeners know you?
Well, the most obvious one is I'm the co-creator of Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra for Nickelodeon, and I'm currently writing a fantasy trilogy for middle grade called Rebel Genius, and the first one came out last year, and working on the sequels right now.
Cool. So, is that what brings you to the con this year, promoting a particular release?
Both my book, Rebel Genius, and then The Legend of Korra comics, which I wrote the scripts for.
Yeah, so we got the trade paperback of the first issue of the first book of that. I guess where can people expect that story to go from here?
Well, there's the way those are broken down, there's like three volumes, 72 pages each, so it's like a three-part story arc of there's a new storyline, new villain, and kind of focusing on Korra and Asami's relationship and this new threat to Republic City.
So is that relationship, I read your post and Brian's post when the show ended about the sort of inclusion of that romance and that you sort of pushed as hard as you could do that. Since you were writing the show, do you think that things are changing in children's television, that things can be more overt in that kind of representation?
I'm guessing it's changing. I honestly don't know because I'm not in that world anymore. But the glimpses I've seen, it seems like networks are more open to it and they're doing it more in things like Steven Universe and shows like that. So it's cool. Hopefully it just gets more, you know, it's just not a big deal anymore that these things are included. And
when you guys made those posts at the end of Legend of Korra, was that something that, like, you had to kind of clear? Or was that kind of like, we own this creatively and emotionally, we're going to say this, you know, even if we were technically not allowed to do it?
Oh, well, no, nobody, I mean, when we do our personal blog posts,
nobody's monitoring
looking
it.
Over our shoulders or saying we should or shouldn't. We always try to be respectful to Nickelodeon and stuff. So, yeah, it was just something we felt like we wanted to be as clear as possible about our intentions with it.
Yeah.
Because there was a somewhat vocal, I don't know how large of the vocal minority it was, of like denying that could be even a possibility, and we just wanted to be clear on where we stood on the issue.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
was it like with Avatar as well, the first series? I think Korra had more of a background that... A background of fans that you might have known what was expecting, but what was it like with the creation of Avatar being intended for a child audience and then coming in with this voracious fandom of, you know, young adult and adult fans to the series? Did it sort of change your perspective on how you were writing and the issues you were addressing, or was it always just... It's sort of just like they picked it up and good for them.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I mean, not that we're Harry Potter by any means, but I always feel like that's the kind of show we wanted to create, was like something that appealed to the kids and older kids and adults and all ages. So I would say that was our intention from the beginning, was to hopefully draw in a wide range of ages and stuff. And I'm glad it's still resonating with people over the years. So
yeah, just obviously it's going out on a network for it was going out on a network for children.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you came back in to create Legend of Korra, was that something you were sort of thinking about, the change in the audience, or the change in, despite where it was airing, who you knew would be paying attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think our me and Brian Konisko, the other co-creator, our storytelling had evolved and stuff over the years, so we just felt like that was a more appropriate way to tell a story and just age it up. It was, when I think of it now, it's like going from middle grade books to like YA books or something. And our fans had grown up with it and stuff, so by the time Korra was out, they were in college or older teenagers or whatever. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
With your book series, with Rebel Genius, what has been the main sort of differences for you? Is this the first time you've worked in like long form, or were you personally writing in long form before that was published as well?
No, this is my first. I mean, I had always dabbled in writing prose kind of things, but this was definitely my first foray into writing a novel. And yeah, it's been a big learning experience.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of what I learned on writing for television definitely applies as far as plotting the stories and creating these like longer story arcs for the characters and character arcs, but certainly like sustaining like that narrative over like 300 plus pages is like a new challenge to figure out.
Yeah. So what with the series you're creating, can you tell our listeners a little bit about that world and what you're hoping to, I guess, the themes, like what you're hoping to show with these books?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the basic concept is art is magic, so it's a fictional Renaissance world where artists have these, like, animal familiars called geniuses, and in one culture they take the form of these birds, and in the other books that I'm working on now, there's kind of like Pegasus creatures, and then there's going to be flying cats in the third one. So there's like these different types of geniuses that allow the artist to project like sacred geometry, and so it allows them to create or destroy or manipulate energy in different ways. And yeah, it's all about, I mean, it's kind of a tyrannical dictatorship sort of world with a woman artist who is kind of squashed free thought and creativity and stuff. So a lot about individuality, freedoms, creativity. I really wanted to write something that had artists as heroes, especially something for like younger kids, because growing up when I was an artist, like I didn't, there weren't a lot of like especially fiction books about artists doing artistic things and stuff, so
it's kind of like craft of it.
Yeah, and not that, I mean, there are scenes where the characters are creating and drawing, but there's a lot of action in it too. So
given that a lot of your work is so visual, and obviously it's like sort of changed mediums, you know, comics to art books to and television, is this long form prose, like, can you see, how would you most like to see this adapted, if possible? Or do you think that this is the best medium for it for the time being?
Yeah, I mean, the goal for writing books for me is, like, the fact that you don't need... It can exist in this form. Like, the writing of it and the... I did illustrations for it as well, but, like, it exists in this form. You can read the story, enjoy it. If it becomes a movie or a TV show, that's cool. You know, down the road, that'd be great, but it doesn't need to... It doesn't need to take on that form for it to have an effect or to be, you know, an enjoyable, entertaining experience.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I was just wondering if you see it as visually as you would see writing for television.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's definitely times where I'm like, man, this would look, this would look super cool.
Yeah.
In, especially because, like, these kind of sacred geometry projections that the artists do in the book, like, it's so hard to, like, describe them as intricately as... I would imagine them. That's one thing I definitely learned is, like, just as far as, like, pacing and stuff, like, not overly describing something because it, like, totally slows the story down. Whereas if you're watching it in a film, you just kind of, like, absorb it.
Absolutely, no problem. Sorry, we're on the convention floor right now, so it's all good. No, it's all good. It's all part of the process. Cool. So on our show, the structure of our podcast regularly is that the hosts bring on a hype and a gripe each week. So something they want to big up and something they want to complain about or raise awareness about or whatever. So what is your current hype and gripe, whether that's about your own work, the convention, or just life in general? What are you most jazzed about and most pissed off about at the moment?
I'm griping about the convention floor only because I'm on it right now. And I hate crowds, and trying to navigate. I love the, like, the vibe of the whole place, and everyone's so excited about all the stuff, and then but the, like, logistics of actually moving through this area is, you know, there's a lot of worse things in life, but but I'm super stoked about my kids. Actually, I have twins, boy and girl, who are about to be one, and
that's amazing.
I'm totally missing. I'm only gone for a couple days, but I totally miss them, and they're awesome, and I'll hype them up. But
no, for real. They have, I have a friend who's a writer who's published a couple of children's books.
Oh, yeah.
Who his son now loves his books. Like, his publisher sent gifts. Would you want your kids to watch your show?
Oh, yeah, no, I can't wait. I mean, they gotta be a little older, but I can't wait, Oh, the one thing, here's one thing I can hype other than them is, because I've been watching a lot of children's shows, we don't show them a ton of TV, but trying to find, they really like music, so there's this awesome thing I discovered called Big Block Sing Song, that's like a preschool song. It's basically like Flight of the Conchords meets like Lin-Manuel Miranda or something, and it's like the coolest thing ever. I love that guy.
Yeah.
So. And the songs are like super creative. The animation's really charming. So even if you're not a little kid, you should go listen to that music because it's hilarious.
Okay, so finally, we have a question of the day each episode as well. And for the convention episode, we're actually just asking what your most... springs to mind memorable moment of a convention has been for you, you know, or first random memory of something. I personally was actually, my first San Diego Comic Con was the year you launched Legend of Korra before it came out.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like, so that's one of mine. Like,
I've been coming, I was just talking to my friend because we drove down together. We were trying to remember the first time we came, and it was like, we think it was 1998. Because it was like, it was before you could just roll in that day and get a pass and get a hotel room. It's a different time. But yeah, we, and Brian just sent me a picture of us at our first, I think it was 2004 for our first panel for Avatar.
Oh, wow.
Where we showed the original pilot.
Yeah.
The like 12 minute one that wasn't like part of the official series, but, and that was our first like official like experience being here with the show and stuff, and it's pretty cool.
It's a very popular universe for people to cosplay in.
Yes.
What was your first reaction? Like, do you remember the first time you saw someone dressed up as something that you made up?
I don't remember specifically the first time, but every year I'm always amazed, like how great the costumes are and how inventive people get. And actually today I just saw a guy... Yeah, like, we've had guys dress up like the cabbage merchant before.
Yeah.
But this guy had a whole cabbage cart. I saw him walking down the street.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Every year I see some new cool version of the characters that's awesome. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us. Yeah, we actually, the group of people who are on this show, we did a rewatch podcast of Avatar and Legend of Korra with a group of four people who'd seen it before and four people who'd never seen it before. So that was a fun process that most of our hosts took part in a couple of years ago. We're doing the same thing for Buffy the Vampire Slayer at the moment. But yeah, we're really glad to speak to you.
So nice to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
and we'll have fun, I guess. We'll see you soon.
All right, take care. Bye.
Here at the last day of San Diego Comic-Con, I have another special guest to talk to you who has a very unique role in helping San Diego Comic-Con be functioning for people. So, hi.
Hi.
So, can you just tell our listeners who we're talking to today?
Sure. I am Carrie Dixon. I'm the editor-in-chief of the SDCCblog.com, which is the San Diego Comic-Con unofficial blog. And we basically cover all aspects of the convention to try to make the experience easier for you guys.
Mm. Is this something you started doing just because you felt like there was a need for it?
Well, actually, I did not form the site. I came on in 2013, and it's kind of funny the way that that happened. Basically, I personally like to put my schedule together earlier than Comic-Con releases the panel schedule.
Understandable.
And so, like, on my own, before I started doing this, like, I would, like, search Twitter and the press releases and try to piece together the put together my own schedule. And in doing that, I found a lot of information, and I basically just started helping with the site, and I took it over in 2014, and we have grown exponentially since then, and it's just been so much fun, and we love helping our readers just figure out Comic-Con, because it's not the easiest experience.
No. And how much kind of, do they like you or do they hate you?
I think it's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I think that they...
They being
Comic-Con International. Yeah, I think that it's somewhere in between. I think that they realize that we provide a service that attendees need.
And that they apparently can't.
I think that they definitely wish we were less critical of certain aspects. Mm. I'm sure On Peak feels the same, and so do several others. But the thing is, like, we're not anyone's mouthpiece. Like, our goal is always just to cover the convention as we see it and to help people out. So
what do you think has changed for the better in the last few years, or changed for the worse, I guess?
Line camping is absolutely for the worst. Like, every year it just gets earlier and earlier.
For the wristband line?
For anything. Like, the Funko pop-up shop line this year was like 200 people deep on Tuesday, and it didn't open until Thursday. Like, that's ridiculous to me.
I was really shocked when we went to the Conan taping about the people standing out the front, like the Funko traders being like, I'll buy you a pop. I was like, I was just not mentally prepared for that. I was like, okay, Funko has, like, done a problem here. Like, I don't know. It was really weird.
They've done it the last 2 years. It did feel a little bit worse this year, but I think that's just kind of the general nature of the convention is, like, I feel like, and I often wonder if we're partly to blame for this, but the more educated people get about things, like, sometimes the harder it is to get.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people maybe didn't realize that, like, if you camp out, you get, like, super close, or they maybe didn't realize, like, you get free pops at Conan, or whatever the case might be, you know?
And now all the info is there, more people know how to get it and know what they're missing out or whatever.
Right, which then makes the lineups happen earlier, which makes, like, everything harder to get.
Yeah. Do you think that queuing the wristband situation is a good situation for Hall H, or a bad one?
I don't feel like it's a bad idea. Obviously, something went wrong yesterday, so for those who don't know, in Hall H yesterday, they give out roughly four groups of 1,500 or so wristbands, and the hall holds 6,500, so there should be plenty of room for everyone who gets a wristband, but for some reason, when they filled the hall, there were still about 400 people with wristbands sitting under the tents, and what the rumor is, and I don't know for sure, what the rumor is that fake wristbands were made this year.
What? Who would bother? I mean, maybe someone would, but geez.
Someone who wanted to get in. So, that's the rumor right now. Comic-Con International was really great yesterday in that for the people sitting under the tents, they actually came out and were like, we are so sorry. And so to make it up for you, everybody who is still under this tent who is wearing a wristband is going to get a 4-day with Preview Night badge for 2018.
Whoa! That is... That's
they did the right thing there,
yeah,
I think. Because if you have camped out for 15 hours to make it into a panel and now you're like, I don't even know if I'm going to get in, and I was like pretty much guaranteed access, I think they did the right thing.
That's pretty amazing. Well, that's good that they did that. But yeah, it's crazy. I saw one thing that I'd never seen before, which was, maybe it is common in Hall H yesterday, which was, they were only letting wristbanded people get bathroom passes. So if you got in and then you ripped out, you know, because people obviously trade in and out for some different panels, you couldn't go back in unless you had a bathroom pass and a wristband.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
That's good. And that may have been, again, because of the issues that they were having with... the wristbands, and they just want to make sure that the right people get in there, and that if you are the one who camped out, that you're taken care of. I appreciate that. I mean, I do. There are obviously ways that they could improve all of this. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens moving forward. I mean, I feel like they're not making full use of the RFID that's in our badges now.
Yeah.
Like, how about instead of wristbands, like, we just have somebody go around with an iPad, like, scan your badge, and then when you go in, like, it'll flash green
or
red.
To go
like, oh, you get in.
Yeah.
So.
It's, I feel like the wristband thing might have been, like, so that, like, okay, if a wristband person leaves, we can fill their spot with another wristband person who's stuck outside rather than, like, someone who's just traded, which is totally fair as well. But, yeah, I'd just never seen that before either, so they were being very strict about that. So that sucks, whatever ended up happening there. So do you, when you actually come on site, because you obviously spend, like, 6 months, you know, like...
Prepping.
What do you actually do when you come on site? What's your experience like when you come on site?
So we view our role here differently than most press sites or media companies or anything like that. Our goal is basically to prepare attendees for the convention and what's going on. So we don't necessarily do the press rooms. Instead, we're reporting on things that attendees actually care about. Like line links and what's going on the floor and like who's giving away swag, and like this is stuff, you know, that like IGN or IO9 or someone like that is not gonna care about. But we know that like our readers, the people actually here, do. Like that's the stuff that you care about when you're at the convention. So that's what we do. It's a lot of that. And our readers are fantastic. Like, it's really cool, quite frankly, that so many of them tweet us line updates, and we get to share all that. And it's like we get to be a million places at once.
Yeah.
So.
Because I was going to say, I feel like myself included, that you're, you know, people depending on you for the convention or news is quite needy. They're you know, they're always like, what's going on for this? What's going on for this? Instead of just trying to figure it out themselves. Oh, I'll just ask. But I suppose it's a two-way street if they're also sending you the information as it happens.
Yeah,
as well.
It is. And we try to help everyone. Obviously, it's really hard this week because we get like thousands upon thousands upon thousands of ads. And so we obviously can't get to everyone. But we try to update like on the big things or the things that we personally think are cool. We just do the best we can.
How many of you are involved in the team?
There's about 11 of us. Usually, this week we're all on the Twitter, which is also really cool because again, it feels like we're literally everywhere on at the convention. Normally it's just me on the Twitter, so all the fun sarcastic stuff is all me. You're so welcome. But yeah. It's fun, and it's cool because for the rest of my team, like, they don't necessarily get to be on the Twitter and just see how it all works, so this is fun for them, too.
Mm. Oh, that's cool. It's definitely super, super, super helpful. There's a few other blogs and accounts that do similar things. Which ones do you work most closely with?
We like Englishman in San Diego. He's really great. Obviously, Outside Comic-Con and Parks and Cons are both technically also on our team, but they do their own stuff as well on their own Twitter accounts. They are both extremely helpful, and I highly recommend both of them. I mean, it's just get the information where you can. Like, we always try to be, like, the one-stop shop for everything, yeah. but there's no such thing at Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. So follow whoever.
Do you actually sit in on any panels or any experiences as a fan?
Yeah, all the time. Oh, my God. So for those that don't know, we hold a reader party on Wednesday night, and yeah. people were making fun of me because Wednesday night, the second the party ended, I went and I slept on the ground to camp out for the Legion panel oh. on Thursday. So, like, yeah, we do the same things you guys do. Like, we sleep on the ground, we go to panels, we do it all.
Okay, so, hyphen a gripe, what was your, biggest compliment and biggest complaint this year?
So... Let's start with the bad, so we can end with the good. Yep. On the bad side, line management this year, I felt... I mean, it's always kind of a mess, but I feel like this year it was even more so than normal. Mm. The wristband thing didn't help. There's always a huge problem behind the convention center with all of the lines for, like, Funko and the signings.
And they bleed into each other.
They bleed into yeah. each other. We keep hearing stories of, like, security lets people in from the back stairs of the convention center, which they're not supposed to do, and so then that screws over the people who follow the rules. On Thursday, it was like a 2-hour wait to get, like, even into the convention center when they opened doors, which is not supposed to happen either. And it was just like mass confusion out behind the marina and all that. So line management definitely, they need to work on some things. Mm. And we say this every year, and I feel like it never changes. Mm. But this year just felt way worse than normal. Mm. So I'm really hoping that, like, something actually changes now.
Yeah.
As for the good thing, the offsites. The yeah. offsites this year have just, like, rocked it out of the park. Yeah. Oh, my God. I went to the Westworld one.
Yeah, people are sleeping overnight.
Yes. Well, again, the lines for everything yeah. get longer and longer, yeah. earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
But no, like, the Westworld one was, like, the coolest thing I've ever done. Yeah. So immersive. Yeah. It was amazing. I've heard fantastic things about the Blade Runner one. I've heard fantastic things about the Expanse room. I'm so excited to do Legion and Mr. Robot today. There's just way more to do outside of the convention center this year, yeah. which is great, because if you can't get into Hall H, or maybe you don't even have a badge, like, it's cool that there's other things around here to do.
Yeah, one of the things that they, I know they've talked about is, and there was a little press conference earlier in the press room on the first day with one of the executives. They were talking about, like, the difference between, like, getting a bigger venue where everything's inside and allowing it to spill out, like, allowing the networks to spill out into the city.
You just can't do that yeah. in, like, a Vegas or...
Yeah.
You don't... Everybody always says, move it to Anaheim, and I'm like, first of all, that convention center is, like, a third of the size of this one.
Yeah.
And so instead of more people, you will have less.
Yeah. I take it you want it to stay here.
I think this is, like, where it needs to be. The thing yeah. is, there are conventions all over the country, mm. and there's really only one San Diego Comic-Con, and I think a lot of that has to do with the location.
Yeah.
And just the city, and for as much as CCI often talks about, like, you know, if we can't work with the city, like, we might move, they all live here too.
Yeah.
They don't want to move. Don't buy into it.
Yeah.
They want to stay.
I feel like it would just be so, like, it would just be like, okay, we're doing it in Vegas this year, and everyone would just turn up and just, like, feel like it was, like, everyone was pretending
yeah.
or something, you know, like, everyone
yeah.
was kind of faking it.
Well, and, like, just imagine, like, Comic-Con, like, mixed in with, like, some of the dirty stuff in Vegas and, like,
yeah.
tourists everywhere. Like, yeah. no, thank you. I like our little bubble
yeah.
here in San Diego.
Like, if you're in, you know what you're in for when you're in the limits
yes.
of the guest land.
Yes, so, yeah. And also we would have to change our name, so that would be a problem.
Don't have time for that. Okay, just one last thing. Question of the day, which we're asking everyone on the podcast, so everyone who comes on, same question. First visceral emotional memory from a past con stands out as a big deal.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Truthfully, for me, at least right now, it's I first came to Comic-Con in 2010,
mm.
and I came because of Psych. And
oh, wow.
So it's so cool to me this year because they're doing kind of like a reunion for yeah. the Psych movie. But But I remember me and who's now my best friend, I had just met her. We were walking around. It was our first night ever here. We had dinner at the Bayfront, and then we walk into the lobby. And again, we've been here for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, she grabs my arm and goes, "That's David Hasselhoff. That's David Hasselhoff." And he totally hears her. And he just smiles and goes, "Hello, ladies."
Good.
So we were here for like 30 minutes and we were like,
okay, we're
this
done.
Is yeah, this is where we want to be. Thank you very much.
That's so great. Oh, that's so amazing. Well, thank you for all your work. It is really impossible to function without it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And yeah, so we will obviously, if anyone has plans to attend in the future, pimp you out in the notes for the podcast in terms of social media and stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you guys for listening.
We are here for Not About the Weather, and I'm standing in front of Lord Mesa's art table, one of my favorite fan artists, have to say. I've bought a lot of your stuff before, but let us know kind of what you've been up to lately.
I'm a freelance illustrator, so been working actually the past few months getting ready for all the conventions that I've been attending. Been trying to do as much artwork influenced and inspired by a lot of the movies and shows that have recently wrapped up. Some of the big stuff I've been working on is I have a statue actually that is available here at the convention for people to purchase, a limited 300. And we're hoping that if they do very well, that it'll open up the possibility of us doing more merchandise, more figures based off my style for Warner Brothers stuff.
Which would be so cool. And this was Arrow specifically.
Yes, Arrow specific.
And how did they approach you for that, right?
Yes.
That is so cool. And I know you have like a huge wall for like the Arrowverse stuff over there at the offices and everything, which is so cool. I mean, that's like dream come true for any like freelancer or anything like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And for every fan, I can imagine,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, because I feel like before anything, I'm really a fan of the show and everything that I've drawn is because of that love and that adoration. So there's that. I'm also working with some app developers on some augmented reality stuff. So I am looking to hopefully announce it in the near future.
Okay, cool. And where can everybody reach you or like follow you on social media?
Social media, you can follow me at Instagram, Lord_Mesa, LORD_MESA. Then I have Lord Mesa Art page on Facebook and Lord Mesa at Lord Mesa on Twitter.
Perfect. And so, of course, we're going to do our hype and a gripe now. So starting with a hype, what's something that's gotten really excited right now?
I would have to say, especially with all the reveals that are going on this past few days, I'm pretty hyped up about the Defenders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, coming out, especially since it's coming out next month.
I heard there was some Punisher footage, too.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about that.
Oh, my gosh. It's a very, like, maybe 3-second clip, but it's just, like, enough to get you so excited.
Yeah.
The Young Justice character designs that they revealed the other day. And pretty much I'm hyped about whatever is going to go happen in the next few hours on the other side of that wall over there.
I'm going to be in the room for WB. And
oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, then you need to come right back here and fill me in on everything.
I will tell you everything.
Okay.
Absolutely. And what's, you know, for your gripe, what's something that you're kind of annoyed about or pissed about lately?
I wouldn't say, okay, the one thing that I feel, being a fan of the shows, CW shows, it's not so much an annoyance as a plea, I guess, is to for everyone that is upset with certain storylines and certain relationships in the stories. I would just ask that everyone just kind of, you know, take it easy on the staff, on the writers, on the actors. You know, I know it's they're a very passionate fandom, and no one can blame you. I'm the same way. At the same time, I always feel like these people are still people at the end of the day, and some of the things that get said about them or it can be really hurtful or very, very demeaning. And, you know, they're all trying to give everyone the best that they can, or the best show that they can. So I would just ask that people be like just a little more understanding about that?
The people who found out about the weather through our original podcast, which was Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, we are kind of in the same boat because we see a lot of behind the scenes stuff with Teen Wolf, and people get really upset about that show too, and the shipping, and you know, who's not together and who should be together, quote unquote, and all of that.
Right.
And they this is their lifeblood, you know.
Yes.
They put so much heart into this, and it might not be exactly what the fans want, but it's the story they're telling. And
right.
when you beat them down, you know, it doesn't solve anything anyway. So.
I came from a time when like there are a lot of crazy storylines that, you know, I grew up when they killed Optimus Prime, and like I can't imagine, you know, if we had the internet back then, and that, you know. The things like that, good or bad, they shape your memories, and you know where you're at when something like that, memorable happens, and that's part of like being a fan of stuff, because there's good things and bad things to show, and you know, the best thing is to just keep going and keep loving it.
Exactly. So we're going to finish this off with our question of the day, which is going to be, what is your most memorable experience from a convention in the past?
It's meeting everyone. I can't pinpoint it to one. I feel like whenever I get to meet people who follow me, especially kids and people that, you know, are younger and are artists as well, it's such an honor to meet you and to talk to all of you and to share the love that I have with everything with you guys. And, you know, that's the reason I love doing shows, is because I'm always behind a computer, I'm always just drawing, and to be able to get away from it and to interact with people is always the best thing. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, your stuff has really blown up lately, so, like, I'm sure you get a lot of people who are really excited to come meet you and see the person who's done all of this amazing art. So thank you so much for talking to us, and everybody, please go check out Lord Mace's art. It's absolutely incredible. You will probably want to buy all of it, to be honest. I know I've spent a lot of money here in the past, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
So another clip from San Diego Comic Con, Not About the Weather. We are speaking to many, many people at the con who are either creators or exhibitors or guests or press, everyone here who has a unique role to play in this thing that we've just done. It's over now, so we're just done. So who am I speaking to today?
My name's Jessica Mason. I'm a writer. I write for the Mary Sue and other places and write about fandom all over.
Cool. So you came, this is your first year at the con as press, is
first
that right?
year as press, third year at the con mm-hmm. in general.
Cool. And how did you feel in general going in to do what the networks present, I guess?
It was really fun to be press. Again, there's a few little perks, like I got to go to the front of the line on two things. And to really actually get to ask deep questions of some of the actors and creators I really admire was wonderful, and to promote some of the shows that I'm really passionate about and give them a greater voice if they need it.
Yeah. So, like, that was one of the things we were just talking about, because we just did a room together for Supernatural, was that, like, in the convention circuit that they do for fan conventions, that, like, a lot of the questions are kind of a waste of time.
Yeah, a lot of the questions are... I mean, I go to the Supernatural conventions, and a lot of the questions are a bit repetitive. You know, what's your favorite prank? What's, you know, what's your advice to be a good actor? And I've always... I've never been lucky enough to ask a question of Jared or Jensen at a convention, and so I just, you know, decided I'd just become a journalist instead to finally ask them a few questions about the show. I just
invented a career and followed
pretty
it
much.
In order to end up here. No, that's a lie. Yeah. Jess is an experienced writer who... So what was the situation with your book in terms of actually someone picking that up? Like, what was the interest there?
Well, I have an agent. I have a book proposal that I'm working on, and I'm working on a sample chapter as soon as I get through the con and Gishwiz. That's sort of the next thing to dive into. Mm. And so once I've got the proposal, that goes out to publishers. But I do have an agent who loves the proposal.
Cool.
And the book is called Fangirling. It's about female fandom and the amazing, like, things we do and the history of it and... the ways, different ways women, female fans especially, have.
So like a nonfiction research, like collection of essays kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's chapters. The first chapter is about, like, history of fangirling. It goes back to, like, Lord Byron's fangirls and, like, Mary Shelley and the Beatles. And then through fandom in the Star Trek era, which was really led by women. And then talks about fic, it talks about conventions, talks about shipping, talks about women who've made fandom into careers, and it talks about how the final chapter is actually called Carry On Wayward Daughters, and it's about how female fandom and fandom in general is starting to really affect the media a lot more. And we got Wayward Sisters, and so like now I'm like...
Seeing it happen. It's crazy. So... What did you do at the convention this year? What did you cover?
I covered Shadowhunters, I covered The Tick, I covered Wynonna Earp, and I covered Supernatural.
Cool. That's quite a few.
Yeah, one a day, which almost was a bit too much, but...
What was your fave?
My favorite Supernatural, like, you don't even need to ask, my favorite Supernatural, barring that, I loved covering Wynonna Earp, because those actors and that creator, Emily Andrus, are just phenomenal people. For a lot of them, it was their first Comic-Con. And I got a lot of cast that was their first Comic-Con, and so they were super excited. But yeah, Supernatural was lovely to finally get to talk to those guys. I mean, they're cool, I guess.
All right. So what was your, like, as I said, we do our hype and a gripe of the episode. So what's yours at the moment? What is your biggest, excitement and your biggest complaint at the moment?
My biggest... excitement was a lot of the things I didn't see. Like, I loved, like, the Stranger Things trailer they dropped and the Thor Ragnarok trailer. And, like, my gripe is that I wish I had a time turner. There's so much at Comic-Con that you never feel like you just scratch, that you could do it all. You feel like you just scratch the surface and things come up and you miss panels and, you know, you actually don't cover it as well when you're there because everyone, you're in it. And everyone else is, when you're at home, you're just reading all the tweets.
Yeah, for real. So, like, it's, Karen said that the other day. She was like, I need a day to catch up on the news at Comic-Con, even though I'm at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Like,
last night, my roommate and I were like, we were like in bed watching the Stranger Things trailer, which was fantastic. Crazy. And so I wish I had more time and better time management to get to everything.
Okay, question of the day. What is your most visceral, vivid memory of a past convention?
Of a past convention? I would say that when I was at Las Vegas Supernatural Con, it was Jeffrey Dean Morgan's first con ever. And he came out, and they do a Saturday night concert with Rob Benedict's band Loud and Swain, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan came out and basically requested, quote-unquote, a song, and Jensen came out, and he, like, just killed on Sister Christian. And he's never sung that song again at any other con, and it was just to see Dean Winchester, like, a rock god. It was pretty cool, and all those Saturday night concerts at the Supernatural conventions are my they're amazing moments, all of them, and I cry at them.
Yeah,
and they're just fantastic. Like,
I will, like, fully go on the record. By the way, I thought it was going to be super lame. I've been to other conventions where Saturday Night Special. I've been to other conventions where someone's had a band or there's been a little music. Even like LeakyCon had like the Wizard Rock and stuff, and like people got really into that. But I have had experiences where that's like an awkward situation, and I was like, is this just like a few people making a big deal of this thing? No, we had them do it in Australia for the first time ever in May, and it was one of the best concerts I've ever been to in my life. It was so fucking good,
and it's,
like, objectively as a music fan,
amazing.
It was, the vibe was like off the charts.
There's so many talented people in that cast, and there's a live album coming out of that concert, and I was so prepared on the Supernatural panel because it's all like drums and a keyboard on stage. I thought Loud and Swain was going to come out, and I thought Jensen was going to sing. But we got Kansas playing Carry On.
Just so everyone knows.
Yeah, Kansas came out, played Carry On Wayward Son live, where this they opened up the screens, and it was like 360 degrees of clips and VFX and like a recap of the whole series, and
the
boys recorded a special video or
I want to know who wrote that as well.
I know it was just fantastic, and so that was pretty cool. To do those musical moments, like, I mean, I've had other ones where Rob Benedict at the Saturday Night Special, he'll sing the song Fare Thee Well, which he sang
on the show.
And I mean, I cry about four times the concert because I cry at everything. But Rob is always usually responsible for making me cry in some way.
Cool. Well, we will speak to you again sometime soon, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wait, I have to start.
You can start. I can start. I don't know. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What are we doing right now?
We are sitting in the hotel. Comic-Con is over. We are about to go home. My trip is a little shorter than yours.
A little bit.
A little bit. I'm packed up. Ready to go. Hiding my sunburn with a jean jacket.
Very sunburned.
I did.
I'm
just lazy is the problem. I just too lazy to put on sunscreen. And then I pay for it, and I'm like, well,
It's my fault.
It's pretty bad.
It is.
Oh, well. You'll have to deal with that.
Yeah.
What the fuck is Fedlearn servicing? Why is this in my
calendar? Oh, that's mine. You have to take all my stuff out. Yeah.
What is Fedlearn? Why do you
have... It's tuition bills I owe.
But why is it saying that the location is in Sapphire EF in the Hilton Bayfront?
I don't know. That's very strange.
I will unsync you from my tablet. Anyway, I don't think you're going to do your tuition stuff in the Hilton Bayfront. We're done over there, so...
Yeah. Dunzo.
Yeah, so how was Comic-Con for you?
It was pretty crazy. It always is. Very full days. Even on days where I had one thing, I managed to have to run around all day and do stuff. But this year it was good. I had a good time. I have not seen that Thor poster yet.
It's fucking crazy, isn't it?
I want one.
Well, we have two, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to send the other one to Brooke or send her the Black Panther one, and you can take the Thor one if you can fit it flat in your bag.
I feel like Brooke would probably prefer Black Panther.
I will text her, because okay. We definitely have two copies of each.
That's a really beautiful poster.
So yeah, what are we doing? What was your favorite thing that we did, or that you did, or
that you saw? It's really hard to narrow it down. There was a lot of really cool things. I feel like I've been talking about this on a lot of the panels, or a lot of the clip shows that we've been doing, but I did go to WB, which was pretty cool. The DC Extended Universe, the Cinematic Universe, isn't, like, I definitely prefer Marvel, but those guys, especially Jason Momoa, he's so insane. In the best possible way, and I was really not prepared to get into Hall H and have those screens expand they did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, not 360, but like a giant...
Like three out of four walls, basically.
Yeah,
like,
screens, and they used the entire thing, so I was in there for... first was Ready Player One, which was really good. That's, if you guys haven't heard of it, it's a book by Ernest Cline that they're turning into a movie. Ty Sheridan is the lead. He's going to play Wade. And you go into this virtual reality world called the Oasis, and there's like a scavenger hunt for this big grand prize. And it's got a lot of 80s pop culture references in it. A lot of people really love this book. Will Wheaton is the one who narrates the audiobook, and I haven't listened to
it.
Was
he in the panel as well?
He wasn't.
He's
wasn't
involved in the film.
I think he might be a little bit, but I'm not entirely sure the extent of that, because they do, the book also references Will Wheaton, and so he might have like a cameo or something fun in there. I don't know for sure. But the movie looks pretty good. The trailer's out now. Mm. It does look pretty good. That was fun. Did the Blade Runner panel right after Blade Runner 2049. Harrison Ford was there. He was sassy. It was pretty great. Ryan Gosling is very nice to look at. He was great, too. And they really took full use of those screens, because they did a whole timeline for the Blade Runner movie and everything, and they started in 2019, which is apparently when the first one takes place. I've never seen Blade Runner, and they did the timeline across all three screens, and it worked really well. And they also played a scene where on one side of the hall was Harrison Ford's character, and he would say something and then kind of disappear out of view, and then Ryan Gosling would pop up on the other side of the hall, and he would answer him, and it was really cool. Actually, I didn't tell you this yet either. Jared Leto was there.
What?
He's in Blade Runner, and he popped up in this like blue triangle thing on stage and did this whole speech about how like important Blade Runner is and what it means to him. And he was like, you know, here's the trailer or whatever, and we're really excited to give it to you. And then he disappears. He like disintegrates. It was a hologram the whole time.
What?
Yeah. And like, I saw it on the screen and I kind of assumed that it wasn't real because I didn't see the stage, but the people who did see the stage and were watching him from there, when he disappeared, they lost their minds because they didn't know he was a hologram.
That is
I feel like that should have been like the opening.
I'm sorry.
That is so weird.
I actually forgot about it until now. So the technology that we have these days, not to go off on a tangent, but like I also did the Legion experience, and they had augmented reality goggles where you could see the room around you, but there were holograms in front of you, and you could literally interact with them using like your fingers and stuff. It's like touch screen, but without touching a screen. You can pick them up and move them and everything. It was really weird, and you know, speaking of not Blade Runner, what was the other one I said?
Legion?
Nope. The first movie panel.
Ready Player One?
Ready Player One. Speaking of Ready Player One, and the Oasis and the virtual reality and all of that, you know, that's not that far away. And they actually talked about that in the panel, hoping that this kind of jumpstarts that, the virtual reality world and all of that, which, you know, lots of dystopian novels are written about that. It could go terribly wrong, but the idea of being able to step into virtual reality whole world is fascinating to me.
That's horrifying, to be honest.
But we did a lot of really awesome things. You know, Teen Wolf is always big for us, and that was a lot of fun, and we got to meet some people we hadn't met before, and there's just...
From Teen Wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
There's just so much.
Yeah. I'm very tired. I feel like it was very physically demanding in a way that it hasn't been before for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like maybe I'm just old. but I found it really difficult for whatever reason. Really, really painful. So... it was, I don't know what else. I liked our hotel.
Yeah, it was a good hotel. We did not run into Chris Pine.
No. Did you see anyone random around?
I didn't, actually. Well, I did pass Jason Mewes on the street.
That's random and around.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I was too shy to say anything. Although, out of everybody, I feel like he would have been cool to be like, hey, what's up? You're awesome, kind of thing. But, like, he also looked like he was trying to figure out where he was going, so I didn't want to bug him.
Yeah. Speaking of Jason Momoa, the first time I ever had any awareness of Jason Momoa was in 2009, way before Game of Thrones. I went to a convention in Australia to go to... I think Seth Green and some other stuff. And the panel before the one that Seth Green was on was like, got one of the guys from Stargate Atlantis, who I've never seen, don't watch it. And that's what Jason was on as well. He started doing the convention circuit for that way before he was sort of in films and stuff. And he was just so funny. It wasn't his panel, it was someone else's, but he came in at the back and started heckling, like from the back of the room, if you know what I mean. Like, and it was when he still had really long dreadlocks, and it was like, anyway, I was just like, who is this charming man? And so the fact that he's now like doing his crazy stuff in
that's
Holly.
The thing about him, he is big and he is loud, but he is so genuinely excitable. Like, he just seems like so fun to be around.
Yeah.
If for anyone who didn't catch the WB panel, the Justice League panel in particular, he wasn't the only one that did this, but he was definitely the one with the most like enthusiasm. When they introduced him, he came running out from the back of the hall. I actually turned around and saw him running behind me, which was pretty cool. I was hoping he would come down our aisle, but didn't. I would have liked a high five. But he comes running with his trident in hand all the way down through the hall, up on stage, and he just starts yelling. He's so pumped up, and the crowd's cheering and on their feet, and he starts slamming the trident down on the ground. And then, you know, everybody else is up there and everything, and they turn the lights down to play the trailer, and it was a really good trailer. And when the lights come up, everybody's standing on stage and the chairs are strewn everywhere and he's just yelling and we're like, what is he doing?
And we finally, like, he just got so excited about the trailer, and finally he calms down, and everybody goes to sit. And all of a sudden, he's like, I can't sit in my chair, I broke it. So he sits on the ground, and this guy has to come out from behind the stage to give him another chair. But he was just tossing them around. He's just, I think he really loves being Aquaman and being part of that universe, and that is really fun to see.
I really like him.
Yeah.
I didn't see Jason Momoa. I saw the Marvel panel instead. Don't worry, Tony Stark wasn't there. It's okay.
That's good.
They had Thor and Ragnarok, though I found it odd that they kind of rattled over the points at the beginning about the stuff that was actually news. Like, so they had, because they introed news about Ant-Man and the Wasp and about Captain Marvel, but they didn't, like, have those people there. They were just, like, it was just, like, the Kevin Feige being like, so this is happening in kind of a really, like, whatever way. And I was like, oh, okay. The information that they learnt about Captain Marvel and Ant-Man and the Wasp. The video of that was very funny. I hope they release it. It was, like, a video of Paul Rudd and Michael Peña explaining the MCU to, like basically to the camera, and then it pans out to show it's, like, someone in a chair listening to them by holding out, like, different photos, showing clips, like, you know, from Iron Man right through to Guardians 2. And it turns out they're talking to Michelle Pfeiffer, who is the new casting for Ant-Man and the Wasp, as Janet Van Dyne, the lost mother. And that was very funny, and I hope they released that, because it was very, very hilarious. Especially, like, some of the, like, meta spoofing of, like, some of the actors and stuff that they did in their explanation. But then they had Thor and Black Panther, and that was both great, but the Captain Marvel stuff, they just basically, like, put up a artist's rendition, and he was like, yeah, it's gonna be this, it's gonna be set in the 90s, it's gonna have Skrulls. Like, it was big news about the movie, but they did not bring any cast. I don't know if they're in production or not. Like, he was just like, yeah, this is happening, and we were like, okay. But then Thor and Black Panther were very good. The response to Black Panther was pretty huge. Thor looks like the weirdest Marvel movie ever made, and I'm super into it. But the tone, like the dialogue, Taika Waititi is another person who I love very much. And that was just nuts. And then they had Joe Russo came out at the end of that. They were kind of like, you know, hang on a minute, we have three Avengers here, like Chadwick. They had, you know, Mark Ruffalo and Chris Hemsworth and Chadwick. And I don't know if the Black Panther is an Avenger officially, but yeah, apparently he is. So they played the Infinity War clip, I think the same one they aired at D23, but when Joe Russo came out before that, like, when they were like, wait, and he comes out, and he's kind of like, there's no way in hell we're not showing you this, I screamed when I saw him in a way that I have not screamed outside of my own control in quite several years. So by this time, everyone, like, was, like, standing up and stuff, but I really like Joe Russo.
You lost your mind over Joe Russo versus...
And what he represents.
Yeah, but yeah, that's totally fair, honestly.
But yeah. I love the Russo brothers so much. They're so kind and careful with what they do. But, yeah, so that was good.
Were those our hypes, or should we do a hype and a gripe?
Yeah, let's do a hype and a gripe. They can be a bit more niche.
It's another story, but for anybody who's been listening for any length of time, you'll know that I've been looking forward to Atomic Blonde for a very long time. And I thought that I would just go see it opening night at my local theater, and it turns out that they had a presence here at San Diego Comic-Con this year. And I was very, very lucky to be able to get in as press for that. So they had a little cocktail party beforehand, which was pretty cool. It was in an open park, and you got, like, we got drink tickets. I went with Kendra, another Hypeable staff member, and we got drink tickets, and Stoli vodka is, like, a big part of
the film.
The movie. And so they had that there. So We got two tickets each, so we ordered, like, I ordered two rum and cokes right away, and then this guy walks up to us and hands us four more drink tickets, and we were like, oh my god.
You guys didn't seem drunk when you came back.
Well, I chugged those rum and cokes, and I was feeling pretty good right afterwards, but we didn't use the other guys, because we actually got there late, because we had other stuff on for the day, but we didn't get to use them, unfortunately, but that would have been pretty fun. And they had, like, popcorn and mini hot dogs and pretzels and cheese out. Like, and they had all these girls. I'll put stuff up on the Hypeable Instagram, too, because I've got some pictures. They had all these girls dressed in blonde wigs, black trench coats, black boots, and black umbrellas, which is a look she has in the movie. And so it was these all these Charlize lookalikes walking around. And at one point, they all gathered in one place in front of the big poster for Atomic Blonde, and I got a shot of that. It looked really awesome. And so they kind of ushered us into the theater, and we got to sit in the VIP theater where they gave out blonde wigs to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so everybody had to put on their blonde wigs. At one point, there was a guy who didn't put his on, and one of the PR ladies came up to him and was like, "Sir, can you put on your wig, please?" And the theater all laughed. But they got us all to put on our wigs, and I have a couple shots from, like, the back, and it just looks so cool having the Atomic Blonde, like, poster up on the screen and having all these blonde wigs on people in front. It looked amazing. And then the director, David Leitch, came in, and Charlize came in, and she did, like, a little speech, and she was like, "Wow, this looks so cool. Thank you guys for... you know, supporting this," because she's been working on this movie for years and years. She produced it, and she's been trying to get it in motion for a long time. Mm-hmm. And even David Leitch, I interviewed him. That'll be up on Hypeable in a couple of days. He talked about how he's been working on this movie for 2 years. So this is a passion project for both of them, and for Charlize in particular, and she was so excited. There's a picture on her Instagram of the theater with all the people in blonde wigs. I can actually see myself and Kendra, which is pretty cool. And yeah, that was awesome. And it was just really cool to see the movie in a theater full of people who were so excited to be there. And yeah, and it was a really great movie. I'm not disappointed. I can't wait to see it again, because the first time, whenever I get really excited about a movie, the first time I see it, it's just, like, a lot to absorb, and so I kind of want to go back and just see everything again, now that I'm not so worried about trying to figure out how it ends and stuff, but it has a great ending. And, yeah, it was definitely did not disappoint.
Cool.
Then I made Natalie try on my blonde wig.
Yeah, it didn't look very good.
I made everybody try on the blonde wig. I have a picture of Kyle with the wig on.
My hype. What is my hype? What is my hype? I talk... Well, this clip show is also including quite a few, you know, people that we had here at the convention that we met or knew in various ways who... did little clips. So one of the biggest moments for me was definitely the stunts they pulled in the Supernatural panel, which I was just, like, not mentally prepared for. We talked about it with Jess, though, so you'll hear that a bit there, or would have heard it already, as we're probably going to put this at the end. My hype, and again, it's maybe more of another thing with podcast issue, but was probably, like, going... Like, let's be real, it was Colton Haynes. So we went to the MTV Fandom Fest. We've obviously done a lot with Teen Wolf and MTV over the time, and we got to watch the guys get, like, an award on stage for being, I don't know, like, services to MTV or whatever.
I don't even know what the award was for.
It was, like,
for.
Some made-up award. It was fine. It was cute. But I got to meet Colton, who I've never met before, and who, if you've listened to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, was my favourite character when I started watching the show, and then when we started doing the show after season two when he'd already left. And I don't know. I follow him on social media, I think he's really funny, but I was like, is this guy a dick? Like, I don't know. Like, is he, because he's so, like, kind of cocky and glamorous, and I thought he might be a dick. I don't know. He's not a dick. Oh my god, he's my new favourite human being, and I love him so much. And I really enjoyed getting to meet him. and that the fact that Colton Haynes was awesome is my hype. Sorry if you're listening to this, or if Jeff is. Sorry that I was nervous, or, you know, assuming that he wasn't nice. But I love him so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm obsessed with him. And I love... No, but getting to see the guys do the thing was nice. Like, getting their award was cool. Whatever it was.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
And Icon Award something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I had also had some alcohol at this point. but aside from, like, oh, cool celebrity... I have a picture, I'll post it later. What else did I like? I really loved the first panel of the day for me. The first thing we saw was Kingsman, The Golden Circle, first panel of the con in Hall H. And I've been looking forward to that movie for so long, and I loved it. And everyone's so funny and cute, and Colin Firth is so amazing, and Taron Egerton is perfect, and Channing Tatum is perfect, and they made Halle Berry drink, like, a tumbler full of whiskey, and then she was, like, oh, like drunk for the rest of the panel. That was good. I loved that movie. Like, I'm really looking forward to that movie, and it looks fucking insane. So that was really good, and I actually really loved the show floor preview that we did. So we did a show floor preview, and
yeah.
I thought it was going to be, like, little, like, all the retailers that have different places in the world and different levels of importance, but they took us to the big booths, basically, as like small groups of media to the big booths, like Lego, DC, Marvel, Sideshow, Dark Horse Comics, like Nickelodeon, and we got some free stuff. But just talking about, like, to all of the people presenting at the convention, like, it was usually like the PR rep or the staff for the booth, like the PR rep for the company, so PR for Lego, or PR for Dark Horse or whatever. And most of the people we talked to were just so, like clearly it wasn't just a job for them. Like, they really cared about their products. Like,
genuinely enthusiastic
and
about
talking
their
to
stuff.
Those people was, I really loved that. Like, mm-hmm. like them, you know, talking about, like, luckily each booth had something I was, like, familiar enough with to be like, what about this? What about this? Which good, because if they'd taken me to a couple of them, I would have been like, I don't know what you do, mm-hmm. sorry. But
that's what I love about Comic-Con, though, is because, like, even though this is a job for a lot of people, like, they're huge fans to begin with.
Mm.
So it always comes off as very genuine and enthusiastic, and of course, like, we as fans respond to that, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I really loved that. I thought it was going to be weird, and I actually ended up really loving it, so that was really, really cool. What about gripes? Not to end on a downer.
Yeah. I want to say, too, Sideshow has an original line of stuff, of these beautiful statues, and the characters that they're made, that the creator made, they're putting them into a book. They're basically making novels out of these characters and the story that they've kind of thrown around, and I think I'm probably going to do a whole hype section on that some week, because I got a little carried away talking to them. I was really into it, but we don't really have enough time now. Gripes. I mean, I think the gripe of Comic-Con is always just the amount of people and the lines and everything. As press, we usually get pretty lucky in that we get panel passes, so we don't necessarily have to wait in line. But just the amount of people and the craziness of it is really overwhelming sometimes. It's a lot to take in, and as somebody who has social anxiety, I do surprisingly well here. I've written an article about why I think that is, and that, you know, everybody's kind of here for the same reason, and everybody is kind of in the same boat in a lot of places. So this doesn't usually bother me too much, but there's just a lot of people, and I found myself a couple of times getting very angry at people just stopping in the middle of the walkway, or, you know, trying to cross in front of me the wrong way or something. And it's just like, if we all kind of stuck to our own lane, this would be a lot more efficient, but mm-hmm. everybody has somewhere to go, and, you know,
I didn't get sunburnt this year, so that was good.
That is good.
Gripe. My gripe is probably just the... probably just the timing. I don't think I got to go to any panels that weren't ones that I was covering, like, which is okay. But, like, I feel like last year I had... Like, I went to lots of things just for fun. But, you know, this time... And I love doing the press rooms as well, but there's tons of stuff that I would have liked to see mm-hmm. that I missed just for the hell of it. Like, especially some of the, like, fan panels or the discussion panels on a subject, like, about, you know, like, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so from all these different things are talking about intersectionality in coffee... intersectionality in comics, or like raising heroic girls. That was like a panel someone I knew was on in the afternoon, or like the psychology of cult TV shows, like that kind of thing, like mm-hmm. different just like actual discussion panels, which I because I feel like actually in the some of the panels were a bit light, like some of the panels I did cover were a bit light in terms of news, like the footage was the footage was news, but they didn't interview the cast. They were just like, we're here.
Yeah. Look. And then a lot of fan questions are like, you know, what pranks do you play on each other? Which is fine. Like, sometimes that's really fun to learn about. But, like, I also really like the deep discussions about characterization and all of that.
Actually, that's my gripe, is people wasting questions in the press room. Because, yeah, fan panel is all well and good if you want to get up and ask something stupid. Whatever. I mean, it's your funeral. Like, that's your life to waste, and it's, you know, if that's what's important to you, that's what's important to you. However, in the press room... One of my press rooms in particular, there are a couple of questions on my table that I was like, really? Like, that's what you're going to ask? That is what my question about characterization got bumped for because you got in before me? Like, and you're asking that, which you're asking. And I actually talked to one of the actors that I know, who was not in that press room, but another actor that I know who's on the same show. And she was like... Yeah, you can tell when people are doing it to get a reaction rather than to get an answer, and we can always tell. And so that, like, just to, like, make a scene, you know, like, make them laugh, make them indignant, like, whatever, as opposed to actually talking about the work. And I'm like, I don't know. And there were one or two in this particular press room, which I was just like, like, why?
Yeah.
Why is this a good question?
I did mostly okay with people. I had one press room where there were two people who would not let others ask questions, and I had to talk to them about that. Mm. Unfortunately, they were really gracious about it in the end, but yeah, that was definitely a thing. But also, and again, like, I couldn't go to the Legends of Tomorrow panel because I didn't have enough time to line up for it, and we didn't have a panel pass. So I went into the press room blind and tried really hard to ask, you know, very specific questions that I figured hadn't been asked at the panel or they didn't discuss. But at another panel or another press room that I was at, they kept asking questions that were very clearly answered during the panel. Things like, what's going on this season? Or what's your character going to do? And questions that, like... I understand that you need this information, but also, like, we're here to be able to ask things that don't get asked during the panel because we have the opportunity to sit down with the actors and discuss moments with them that we want to know the answers to or our readers want to know the answer to, and wasting that on very broad questions, especially when you're taking over the table with those very broad questions, is extremely frustrating. But it is what it is, and, I mean, everybody is there because they're fans most of the time, and they are very enthusiastic, which is really great, but sometimes balancing all those different personalities at a table is a little hard while you're trying to be professional at the same time.
Yeah, and sometimes you can really feel the resentment.
Yeah,
could have been. There was another in this same press room where I think that a person was wasting questions. There was another table right near me, which everyone looked nice and quiet, and no one had a camera on it. And mine had like five different people with cameras, so I kind of wish I'd been on that table and been able
to film, because one of the things that we always do when we know people in the room, like for Supernatural, for example, I knew several people and all of us were on different tables, yeah. which means we're all going to swap content. You know, everyone's going to have a different interview. And this other table didn't have anyone I knew and no one had a camera. So I'm kind of like, what was said over there? I want that one. But it was already... they'd already started an interview on that table by the time I arrived, so I couldn't have chosen that one.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Never mind, it was still... Mm-hmm. I loved doing that room, so that was really good.
I feel like this is also the correct platform to talk about what we did last night, because that's a pretty big hype. Shouldn't we?
I don't know, maybe not another Teen Wolf podcast is the place. Remember other podcast that we did?
Well, yeah, but, like, this is a good... friendship one. I mean, we're going to talk about it on the other one too, but not everybody listens to that one.
Suppose Karen and I got a tattoo, whatever. Let's move on.
We really did. That wasn't a joke. We got one for Teen Wolf. For anyone who watches the show, it's the Japanese kanji for self behind the ear, like they get in the show. And, yeah, we and the other girls from Not Another Teen Wolf podcast are going to get it together. Nat and I kicked it off last night. It was my first tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty great, actually. I quite liked it. It barely hurt, so that was wonderful.
Wow, can you guys hear those sirens? We're so high up, I don't understand why the, like, windows aren't double glazed.
That is a very large fire truck, though, so it's pretty loud.
Karen did well. I have a photo of her taking a nap on the bed.
Yeah. And, but, you know, between what the show means to us and the fact that it literally is the reason why we're friends, we kind of felt like we had to get it. And we're together, and that was really great. It was a good shared experience.
It was good.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
To say that I have a tattoo now.
Mm-hmm.
I sent it to a bunch of my friends.
Question of the day. What we've been talking about, what is a very vivid memory for you from a past convention?
Gosh, do I have to go first?
No, I can go first if you want.
You have one in mind?
There's a few of them that I've actually mentioned on the show, like, already. Like, when I was talking to Mike, Dante DiMartino, one of my very vivid memories was the first time I came to San Diego Comic-Con, and one of the biggest things that we did that year, besides Glee, was the Legend of Korra panel before the show had come out. So it was when they were launching even just the concept art, and I sat on that panel with some of my friends from Team Starkid, and that was kind of weird because people were being like, can we take a photo of you? And I was like, oh, this is really awkward. That was like one of the first time I'd been out in public with anyone that was like in any way well known.
Yeah.
Like, this is weird. But anyway, never mind that. The panel itself, it was packed. It was crazy. That was really cool. I mentioned that with when I talked to Mike, and when I talked to who else did we talk to? I can't even remember. Yeah, I think that we've mentioned a couple in some of the other clips that we did. Vivid memory from past convention, you'll hear a bit of discussion in another episode that we're doing, again, with Starkid, with Nick Lang, who we were talking about the day that they did the Very Potter senior year at the LeakyCon convention in Chicago, the one-day performance they did that, which was, like, very visceral. That would certainly be in, like, top five convention memories. Last year's American Gods panel, though. Last year's American Gods panel was, like, I was just crying the whole way through. Like, seeing the amount of people that were, like, enthusiastic to care, enthusiastic to come, like, for the show to come out, and the reaction to Neil, the reaction of people to Neil, and the fact that they whole room gave him a standing ovation when he walked out was like, I was just like freaking crying like the whole time, like, because I don't usually like see him in that context, and it was really crazy. And yeah, that was pretty wild. The first year I did Comic Con press for Hyperball, I did Hannibal as well, and that was really amazing because everything Brian does is like has a great fandom and everything's really chill and fun and stuff. But in the press room, when it was a press conference, but because they're very, very chill, everyone was hanging out afterwards, taking selfies, talking to Brian, like he was showing people stuff on his phone for American Gods because that's what he's like. But I met Hugh Dancy and I was really starstruck by him for the first time in like years. Like, so that was also very visceral. Like, I remember like shaking meeting Hugh Dancy, because if I love someone's work, but I don't know them very well as a person, I get really nervous. Mm-hmm. People, I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're like. I know how to take you. Even if I love their work, I'm like, yeah, my good friend Jared Padalecki, if you know what I mean? Like, it's fine. But Hugh, I love Will Graham so much, and I had no idea what he was like as a person. And I was like a mess. Like, I was like the photo is blurry because I was like, so that was also a big memory. But yeah, have you got one?
Yeah, a lot of my stuff honestly centers around Teen Wolf, because I think by now you guys know how much the show means to me, not just as a show, but as an experience, as a moment in my life. I would honestly have to say, like, BiteCon. Oh, shout out to BiteCon.
Yeah, for sure.
That was huge for us, because all five of us were in the same place for the first time. That was the first time I had met Brooke, and it was just absolutely incredible, that experience. We were part of the convention, so we got to go into the green room, and I remember Natalie throwing me under the bus to Lyndon Ashby about how much I love Mortal Kombat, and he just wrapped me in this big hug, and I will never forget that. That was a great, great moment. And yeah, the five of us being together and going to set, like, you know, Brooke, like, forgetting to put her shoes on. Like, we have all these wonderful memories, and that's huge for me. And a lot of stuff really centers around Teen Wolf for me. Last year's New York Comic Con panel, Donnie and I were together, and we thought it was the last one. It was supposed to be the last one, to be fair. And I cried a ton during that because, you know, everything that show has given us as a circle of friends is really hard to put into words. Although I'm going to have to when the show's over. I'm going to have to write something about it. And that's going to be, yeah, really gross and difficult. But that's always really wonderful. I will have to say, this isn't past convention, but I did get a chance to briefly talk with Bex Taylor-Klaus this year after the Voltron panel. She was kind of standing by herself and we were heading out. And I was like, hey, I just want to let you know that I really love Scream and I'm really bummed about season 3. And she was just kind of like, yeah, me too. And she was so, so nice. And she let me take a picture with her. And I just think she's a great actress and a really cool person. And I was a little starstruck, which is kind of silly because, you know, she's my age. She's not like super famous or anything. She's been on Arrow briefly, and Voltron and Scream are kind of her big things. But I really like her, and so I was a little nervous and a little tongue-tied, but she was really chill, and I wasn't weird. At least I'm pretty sure I wasn't weird, so, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Good. Yay.
Well, I need to go.
Yeah, you have to leave. That's fine. You're going to go to the airport.
Yep.
I have to call the front desk and let them stay stay longer, hopefully.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, it was another great San Diego in the bag. We'll probably be back next year. Are we going to get another tattoo, Nat?
Maybe. No, tell me. We'll see.
We might. I have to catch up to you. You have a lot more than I do.
That's true. Well, yeah, we have another episode coming. That was just another live episode sitting around at a cafe talking to my friend Nick Lang from Team Star Kid, who was meant to be part of this episode as like a 10-minute clip. And then we ended up, like, talking for...
discussion about movies.
And... like an hour and 15 yeah. minutes. So we're going to put that out as a separate episode. But that's great. That's not really even Comic-Con related. It's just kind of movie chat.
Yeah.
Industry chat.
Mm-hmm.
He's really cool. So I'm glad to have had him on.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was down here for a panel as well. So, yeah.
Hope you guys liked all the clips we gathered. It was a lot of fun doing them. Got to talk to two of my favorite artists, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Lots of interesting people. And yeah, so we'll try to do this at other events in future as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so bye-bye.
Bye.